Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And joining me today to help you get ready for NFL Week 3 action is Todd Furman, host and co-founder of the Bet the Board podcast and analyst for CBS HQ. You can follow him on Twitter at Todd Furman. Todd, great to have you on the show.
Hey, thank you for inviting me on, Rob. Hopefully we can make all of your listeners and viewers a little bit smarter in a few minutes so we can keep those bankrolls intact as we head towards week three. And man, you blink and the start of the season almost feels like it's already in the rearview mirror.
I know. Amen to all of that. So what we're going to do is first, we're going to do a quick recap of NFL week two, then get to week three. But Todd, there's a narrative on your Twitter that I love that I have to talk to you about because I don't hear it anywhere else. And this comes from one of your tweets that says, just one week, I'd love sportsbooks to tell us how many 8, 9, and 10 team parlays lose at their shop instead of picking out the one that defies the odds as a sports betting lottery ticket. And the reason this resonates with me so much is because foundationally, I want to teach people how to fish, how to be a more informed sports bettor. I know what the downside of all of this is. And so much of sports betting can get overly glamorized where they just say, look at all of this, like we're winning the lottery all the time. Why is this a thing for you?
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. There's always a place for parlays in the sports betting ecosystem, and they're never going away. And I think a lot of people can have fun with them when you use them responsibly. But you're right. I think when you sensationalize how many of these things actually hit because you get caught up in the social media storylines, the headlines. I mean, just this past week, MGM apparently had a player that went a $25 free bet with the chance to win more than $700,000. Those stories are few and far between. It's essentially mega bucks on the slot machines. And the reality of it is a slow, arduous process to try and become a profitable sports bettor. So if you want to play a 2 or 3 teamer, hey, look, there's plenty of opportunities to turn that into a positive expectation. But I just want people to keep perspective that if you keep plugging away, hoping that you're going to hit an 8 or 9 teamer, Rob, I've never hit one in my entire betting career, probably because I've only bet 3 or 4 of them along the way. But the simple reality of it is those should be kept in a silo, have a little fun with it, but don't try and use them as a foundation if you want to be successful betting sports long term.
So really it would be bankroll management. All right, we're not saying you can't do these things, but maybe you say, I'm going to set aside X amount of my bankroll to really invest in a lottery ticket. And if we were to do that, Todd, do you think that money lines are probably the, air quotes, smartest way to try and accomplish this?
You know, I won't say there is a smarter or dumber way to try and do it. I think if you're going to capture lightning in a bottle and look to play 7, 8, 9, 10, maybe even more teams in there, you know, go about structuring it in such a way that you feel you're going to get your entertainment value. And again, if it's a $10 bet that happens once every weekend during football season, so be it. Take full advantage of it, enjoy it, have fun with it, but don't use that to replace some of the straight wagers and some of the fighting chance that you have against the sports books, just because the math is always working against you. I mean, there's a reason that you've seen books over the years change the math on a 6, 6.5, or 7 point teaser in the NFL, but parlay math never changes. And having spent time behind the counter at Caesars when we put out the parlay cards, it was a very healthy part of our business. And it's not as though we pulled games off of those cards that moved upwards of a full field goal, because we knew over the course of the long haul, it was an amenity for the customer and they were going to be fighting an uphill battle, even with the half point cards or whatever unique variations we were putting out for a particular season.
Yeah, my mindset has always been, it's hard enough for me to win one bet, nonetheless, 2, 3, 8, or 10 bets. So how about
right
I just try and give...
I'm right there with you, my friend. For every 100 bets I make, if I can win 54 to 55 out of those, it still leaves plenty of opportunity to get saddled with those bad beat losses.
100%. So looking back on NFL week two, we went 1-2 with our picks. Our get comfortable being uncomfortable bet of the week of the Chicago Bears. That was a sort of easy bet or easy winner, albeit a little bit of a sweat at the end. Our pick a loser of the 49ers lost. And this was terribly frustrating. And Todd, I want to get your thoughts on this because the Eagles are up 3-0. They're driving. They look like they're about to go up 10-0. The narrative of the game is perfect in setting up. Boom, everything that I thought, we got him at 3.5. This looks amazing. And then all of a sudden, the Eagles completely crapped the bed. 49ers win this game. And I'm sitting here scratching my head saying, what in the world happened to the Eagles in that game? A game in which they looked like they were in control from the beginning.
Yeah, and I'm right there with you. I was also sitting on an Eagles ticket plus 3.5, thought the way the game plan had unfolded, at least for the first 26 minutes, was exactly as you'd envision. The 49ers were a little bit flat. The Philadelphia Eagles defensive line was controlling the trenches, and you have that touchdown pass to Jalen Reagor called back because he was forced out. I don't think that was quite the case, but even with that play, you get the big pass over the top to Quez Watkins, a first and goal where the Eagles come away with nothing, and the momentum-changing drive before the half, the 49ers go 97 yards and I believe 12 plays, and suddenly a game that you've dominated, you had a massive yardage edge, you're going into the break facing a 7-3 deficit, and with a team like Philadelphia that's young, still has to learn how to win, it's a disappointment to say the least over the first 30 minutes because they could have had a 14, maybe 17-0 type lead. Then they give up the first touchdown of the second half. They do, of course, get the late score, convert to two, just weren't able to get the offense in a position to get any closer coming up 17-11 on the short end. But I'll contend it was the right side for the first 30 minutes. But when you go into the break chasing four, it didn't leave me feeling warm and tingly with Philadelphia needing to play from behind.
I'm with you. And our last thing, our Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week. Hit the Packers, hit the Browns, but lost with the Steelers. And how in the world did that happen? Me being from Pittsburgh and a Steelers fan, if you would have told me no Devin Bush and no Joe Hayden ahead of time before I placed that bet, then they lose TJ Watt and Tyson Alualu to injury, that Steelers defense got absolutely decimated. And I look back to sort of what I was live tweeting during week one, and it was the Steelers defense is going to need to win this game versus the Bills. And it was sort of the special teams that made all of that happen because the offense in Pittsburgh, there's so many weapons, but there's just my spider sense and what I'm seeing with Ben Roethlisberger is he's very brittle. The offensive line is doing him no favors. And this is football 101 with ask David Carr when he came to the NFL when you have no protection, or Zach Wilson certainly experiencing this. When your line isn't doing anything and Ben is made of wheat thins and is super brittle, he's getting no time. And that just... the game just did not unfold like I expected when I placed the bet on Tuesday. What's your thought on Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it's a real problem. And I think the offensive line, to the surprise of no one, was the major concern with that group going into the season. You look at the weapons that they have. Deontay Johnson, of course, gets hurt at the end of that game. We'll have to monitor his status going forward. The Steelers haven't given any indication that it's going to be overly serious, but you have the weapons. But if you can't protect an aging quarterback there who's getting the ball out of his hands quickly and doesn't appear to be reading defenses the same way in the twilight of his career that we were seeing earlier, it's a real problem. You mention all of those defensive injuries, and I think the Steelers can handle one, two, maybe even three. But when you look at the cluster situation of being down five starters, and that doesn't even include Steven Tuitt, who hasn't taken a snap yet and could be lost for the entire season, the Steelers were going to put themselves behind the eight ball. And then let's add another layer into it. Mike Tomlin electing to punt where the Steelers had all the momentum in a fourth and short situation when clearly his defense was gassed. A lot of curious decision-making to say the least. And then the Steelers, of course, third and 10, they have a chance to get off the field and get the ball back. You run a safety blitz, doesn't get home, and Derek Carr stands in the pocket and finds Henry Ruggs. I think this is going to be a long year for the Steelers team, a lot of ugly football games. And if that defense can get healthy, they're definitely going to have to lean on the stop unit. And it explains part of the reason that you've seen money pretty well respected coming in on the Bengals at plus 4.5. And I think you could see a little bit of buyback, though, with the Steelers, especially at minus 3.
Yeah, for me, as it relates to that game, it comes down to the health of the defense, because if you tell me TJ Watt is there and Devin Bush is there and Joe Hayden is there, now we're back to the majority of the defense we saw against Buffalo, and we've seen with the Bengals. They've just been a turnstile. I believe it's 9 sacks of Joe Burrow in the first 2 games. So the thing the Bengals have had trouble with is protecting the quarterback, and that's the thing that the Steelers want to feast on, because the Bengals have the better offense going into that game, but it's a matter of, can you make Joe Burrow uncomfortable?
Yeah, I mean, so many different factors here, and I think you saw the Steelers and Bengals both address what they perceive to be major needs through the draft. I mean, the Steelers had a chance to get a building block offensive lineman at the tail end of the teens where they were drafting, but they decided, hey, we wanted a game-changing back in Najee Harris. Harris is going to be great. The problem is you're going to have to utilize him more as a receiver out of the backfield because he's going to find tough sledding running in the running between the tackles. And the same kind of thing for the Bengals. They go out and they get Joe Burrow's college teammate in Ja'Marr Chase. Chase is going to be a phenomenal talent on the outside, but you begin to wonder, given the duress Burrow has been under through the first 2 weeks, if this team wouldn't have been better drafting Penei Sewell with the fifth pick to try and protect the face of their franchise. Because no matter how many weapons that you have on the outside, if you're running for your lives or you can't stand still in the pocket, it's going to make for precarious sledding. And I'm very curious to see in a matchup this weekend that you mentioned with two teams all familiar with each other, trying to figure out whose stock can be rising and who's going to be able to right the ship given what we saw last week and a very disappointing efforts from both teams.
And speaking of that, last week was overreaction week. And I'm curious, if anything, what you learned from last week, because we saw a lot of narratives going one way or another. A lot of these games, we'll get to the Minnesota Vikings later on, but the margin of victory or defeat is so slim, but a team could be just as easily 2-0 as they could 0-2. Is there anything that you're taking into week three that's helping shape your mindset?
You know, Rob, it's always interesting because you're right. When you look from week one to week two, no team is ever as good or as bad as they appeared in that opener. Just ask Titans fans who were ready to try and throw the baby out with the bathwater in wake of a 31-13 loss to Arizona. And then when you get down 24-9 against the Seahawks, you think, oh, here we go again. It's more of the same, until Derrick Henry kind of resurrected that performance, allowing them to win in overtime. You talked about the Vikings, but for me, one of the teams that I'm very curious to see this weekend is the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo didn't really look poised offensively against your beloved Steelers in the season opener, but it was a special teams play that really swung the momentum there. Buffalo, at least on the scoreboard, appears to get healthy with a 35-0 win against the Dolphins. But the Dolphins were shell-shocked once they lost Tua. They gave up a 40-plus yard run early on in that game to Devin Singletary. And I don't think all is exactly well with Buffalo just yet, because you're not going to generate 35 points offensively with the yardage output. Josh Allen hasn't looked like the same quarterback, at least through 120 minutes that we saw last year, warrant that huge payday. And, you know, rise to the top of the odds board as far as bettors were concerned as a viable MVP candidate. So of all the teams that we've seen so far, Buffalo is going to be the side that I'm watching through a magnifying glass on Sunday, especially against the Washington defense that's underwhelmed through its first two games of the season, but comes in with a significant rest advantage, having played on Thursday night against the Giants with a couple extra days to scheme for that high-powered Buffalo attack.
So, Todd, this is a great transition to NFL Week 3, and let's do our first segment, our Big Mick Moneyline Parlay of the Week.
I see they got the Big Mac. I got the Big Mick.
And the goal of the Big Mick is just to produce a winning bet. That's all we got to do, Todd. We just got to produce a winner. And for me, I've got a four-team Moneyline parlay that pays plus 130. Give me the Carolina Panthers, Denver Broncos, the Baltimore Ravens, and the aforementioned Buffalo Bills. So when I looked into this, I said, all right, who's going to lose this for me? So in order for this to lose, one of these teams has to win. Either the Texans win, the Jets win, the Lions win, or Washington wins. And the exposure that I saw was also, we've got two road teams being the Panthers and the Ravens. I usually don't like to have a road team because obviously home teams would be much better. I thought about putting the Chiefs in there, but I left them out because it's a division game and I try and create these rules for myself. So for me, I know a lot of people are going to say, but Rob, all you do is take these big favorites. Well, guess what? This can win when you sort of create a formula like this. All we're trying to do is produce a winning bet. So my four-teamer, give me the Panthers, Broncos, Ravens, and Bills. Todd, I'm curious, do you have a Big Mick Moneyline parlay?
You know what? Typically for me, Rob, that's a bet type that I stay away from, only because I've seen so many folks come through the sports book, especially during my time at Caesars. And we used to call a lot of those folks, not so much in the NFL, but more college football, bridge jumpers above all else, because they identify that 14-plus favorite in college football, and they can't imagine under any circumstance where that team would potentially go down. So when you dig through the board, you know, I'll go a slightly different direction and, you know, kind of look for a two-team teaser. You talked about the Vikings earlier. I think the Vikings make for a phenomenal teaser leg to try and be able to take up through a variety of key numbers, getting them up through the three, getting them through the four, the six and the seven, taking them out to 7.5. And you know what? I'll pair them up with the Miami Dolphins. I know uncertainty around the quarterback situation with Tua being ruled out, but I think this is a Raiders team that's overvalued. And while the number's off the board at some shops, getting the Dolphins anything better than a touchdown, that would be my two-team teaser to rival your Big Mick Moneyline parlay for the week.
And actually, I like where you're going at because the next segment is get comfortable being uncomfortable. And our goal with this bet is to take something that doesn't feel all warm and fuzzy inside. You feel gross when you're laying this down. And for me, give me the Vikings +1.5 taking on the Seahawks because this is almost like a principal bet because the Vikings are significantly better at home than they are on the road. The reason this makes me uncomfortable when I'm giving this a Randy Moss 84 out of 100 on an uncomfortable scale is because what we see out of Kirk Cousins and what we see out of the Vikings and their propensity to find ways to lose close games, and certainly one team that is in tons of close games is the Seahawks. Never feel all warm and fuzzy betting against Russ. But this Vikings team went to overtime with the Bengals and should have beaten the Cardinals. They are just as easily a 2-0 team as they are an 0-2 team. So what would this line be looking like if they were 2-0? I can tell you this, they're going to be laying points because of this. Give me the Vikings getting 1.5 at home as my uncomfortable bet. What about you, Todd?
Yeah, I like this spot quite a bit. And this thing was going to set up perfectly on, you know, had Seattle hung on against the Titans, this would have had all the dynamics in play that you'd want for a desperate Minnesota team in its home opener, ruining the opportunities that have gone by the wayside. Because much like you, I don't think Dalvin Cook fumbled in that overtime period against the Cincinnati Bengals, which would have given them a chance to win that there. And of course, Greg Joseph missing not a chip shot field goal, but one an NFL kicker should make. With the game hanging in the balance. So this Vikings team very easily could be 2-0 despite all the turmoil that they've dealt with during camp. This one's going to make people real squeamish and uncomfortable, but this number's gotten bet up to the point where I really can't ignore the price. And it's one that if it hits, you feel good about trusting the process. And if it loses, people are going to look at you like you have three eyes and you're the biggest moron on the face of the planet. And that would be the Jacksonville Jaguars +7.5 against Arizona. When you look at this Cardinals team, they were dynamic offensively against the Tennessee Titans. They went out there, took care of business. Chandler Jones lived in the backfield. You saw Arizona withstand a little bit of adversity last week against the Minnesota Vikings. And I think you're seeing a potential superstar coming of age in Rondale Moore, who came into the season arguably as their fourth receiver on the team, but he's had more targets through 2 weeks than even DeAndre Hopkins. The defense looks drastically improved, but this has landmine written all over it because Jacksonville struggled to move the ball against Denver, but I think they're going to find easier sledding in this game against Arizona. And don't look now, but Arizona has a huge divisional matchup on deck against the Rams. These are the kind of games that I need to see Cliff Kingsbury get his team focused for. Go out, blow out inferior foes before I officially believe in them. So with this number leaking up through the key price of 7 at 7.5, I think the Jaguars don't warrant a big bet by any stretch of the imagination, but definitely a value proposition this weekend.
What's your mindset on betting, let's call it the worst teams in the league? Because I remember for years when the Browns, when they were 0-16, and what would we hear on podcasts? There's so much value on the Browns, and it's like loss, loss, loss. And of course, I completely get it. It's not comfortable to bet on the Jags. And I love what you're talking about in terms of the opportunity to fade the Cardinals, because I think myself and so many others don't believe in Cliff Kingsbury. So we're waiting for that shoe to drop. But how do you evaluate the lowest end? When is it just based on the number? Because there's not much that gives you confidence in Urban Meyer, what we've seen out of Trevor Lawrence so far either.
Yeah, it gets to be significantly more difficult, and my number has to be far off from where the market is, or I have to find situational components that I think are working in my favor, because you mentioned the Browns, and I was one of those guys that found himself on the Browns every week because the market was undervaluing them by a field goal, maybe even more in some instances. The problem being is things snowball for bad teams a lot faster than they do for good teams. They're unable to overcome that one critical mistake and be able to right the ship. And you see it all the time in college football. You bet a team that's in control, suddenly one turnover goes the wrong way, and three possessions later, they've taken a 7-point lead and it's a 14-point deficit. So it's always difficult to try and do this because inevitably, as bettors, it's human nature. You end up kicking yourself going, what am I doing betting on this kind of garbage, expecting good things to happen? But at some point, there's value in every number. And early on in the season, I don't think any of these teams have truly cashed in their chips. And typically, finding those 0-2 teams against teams that are 2-0 is where you're going to get a little bit of wiggle room. And the Jags fit some of those parameters. Again, not one of the strongest positions I'll have of the weekend by any stretch of the imagination. Just at 7.5, it warrants a small dabble because I think this number is a touch rich. And to be quite honest here, I look at Denver and Arizona. I make Denver a favorite over the Arizona Cardinals on a neutral. So the fact that Denver closes a 6-point road favorite last week and Arizona is at 7.5, all the value in the world, especially through a key number, is indeed on the Jags here. That being said, would it shock me if Arizona is up 21-0 at the end of the first quarter? Not at all. But you know what? Thankfully, in this business, you don't pay any more if you lose a game by 3 touchdowns than you do by a missed field goal as time expired.
Todd, when you take these gross dogs, is live betting them part of your strategy at all? Where so often we see, like you talked about, they can get down 14-0, 21-0, where all of a sudden more value presents itself. Is that sort of way of betting part of your flow?
For me, I don't like to double down on some of the dregs of the league. So typically when things don't start well for them, they tend to go in the wrong direction pretty quickly, where sometimes if the, you know, in a game like this, if the Jags can get out to an early lead, you may be able to create a middle or arbitrage situation coming back with the superior team, or at least perceived to be on paper. And we saw that last week. Jacksonville gets out to a 7-0 lead against Denver. And that was kind of the highlight of the afternoon for them. Whereas if Jacksonville gets down, you know, 14-17 points, I'm not sure I want to double down my position. I can know when I'm cooked, I'll tip my hat and move on to fight another day rather than chasing bad money with good money and turning what should be a small hole on a particular game into a Grand Canyon type loss.
But what if you don't make the first position and you say, I'm waiting for my first position to be when they get down? So I'd be like, all right, what is more likely, and the analytics might not support this, but is it more likely that the Jags get down double digits, so it doesn't make sense to me to get in at this number as my first position?
Yeah, I'd probably go the other way in this instance, whereas I'd be more inclined to bet the Jags early in the game, maybe even with a first half investment if the number got there, or dabble on, say, a first quarter money line. Because I think with a young team like Jacksonville, they're going to improve as the season goes. I'm skeptical of how Urban Meyer will relate to some of the players and adapt to the NFL game. But you have to imagine you're going to get the best from some of these teams early on. It's not going to be like a veteran quarterback that if Trevor Lawrence starts out poorly in the first half, he can flip the switch like you saw Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans do on the road against Seattle. It's more likely to go in a negative manner late. And you're more or less praying to keep that back door open to come in with a slightly more advantageous price.
I dig that mindset. So last segment we have is pick a loser.
Oh, what a loser.
And the goal of this bet is to think opposite. Everybody wants us to pick a winner, but can you identify a losing bet? And I actually had a challenge trying to figure it out this week because there was a lot of small numbers. But for me, my pick a loser, I'm going to Monday night, is the Dallas Cowboys laying 3.5 at home. And I'm going to go back to the formula that actually worked for me last Thursday when I was on the Giants +3.5. Division matchup, team getting more than a field goal, sign me up with the Eagles. And so often when you get burned by a team 1 week, you're a little bit gun-shy to take them the next week. And I've really learned this also in all fantasy sports. A player kills you because you're a year ahead on them, and then you don't take them the next year and they break out. And for those reasons, I see a potentially close matchup there. Give me the Eagles, or actually give me the Eagles getting 3.5, which means my pick a loser is the Dallas Cowboys. What about you, Todd?
So I'll stay in the same division, and I'll go up to MetLife Stadium. Who in their right mind wants to try and back the Atlanta Falcons in this spot, given what we've seen from them through the first two games of the Arthur Smith era? Embarrassed week one by the Philadelphia Eagles. They fought valiantly back to get into the game against Tampa late before they were done in by a couple of non-offensive touchdowns. The Giants, extra time to prepare. Daniel Jones looked poised, didn't turn the ball over. You saw his dual threat ability on full display. But this is still the Giants. There's minimal home field advantage working in their favor. This is a team I don't believe that should be favored over anybody at this juncture in time. And the opportunity for me, again, to grab an 0-2 team against another 0-2 team catching a field goal. My pick a loser is the Giants. I think the Falcons are a value proposition +3.
And in our last segment, you were talking about the team that's down three and or up three and then throws two interceptions for touchdowns. And I just relived the bet that I was on of the Falcons +12.5 last week. You're sitting there, you're like, boom, they're down three. They got the ball. This is money. We're going to defeat Tom Brady. And like in the blink of an eye, you're like, oh my God, why am I betting on the Falcons again? I feel so sick.
There are a number of those instances that occur throughout the season, and I think that's one of the things for new bettors that are out there. It's going to test your it's going to test your intestinal fortitude and your willingness to back what are perceived to be bad teams, because there's no doubt their margin for error is a lot slimmer than when you try and back the Kansas City Chiefs, the Baltimore Ravens, the Tampa Bay Bucks. But at the same time, it's all about numbers. It's not about the logos on the helmets or the names on the back of the jersey. And I think every team eventually hits its price point. So you have to know when it's the right time to jump into that deep end, back a bad team, and hope that you've done your homework the right way where they can exploit, you know, a tactical advantage either on the offensive, defensive side, or maybe even on special teams.
Todd, really enjoyed jamming with you as well as following you on Twitter. Where can everybody connect with you?
Yeah, like you said, on Twitter, at Todd Furman is going to be a great avenue and vehicle to do so. Encourage people to ask whatever questions they want. Don't be offended if I don't have a chance to get to them each and every week. But go ahead, download the Bet the Board podcast, available where all podcasts are, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, SoundCloud, you name it. We did launch the Bet the Board pregame show this year. So it's a first video component to our franchise, which is available Fridays at noon Eastern. And that's available on YouTube.com. Search out Bet the Board. Great information for bettors of all ability levels. Those are going to be the best mediums to try and find it. And CBS Sports HQ, part of the Monday, Thursday, and Sunday pregame show, we try and offer up some player prop analysis and find unique investment vehicles to try and keep that bankroll in good standing from now until they crown a Super Bowl champion in the middle of February.
And I want to hear from you. What does your NFL Week 3 card look like? Do you have a Big Mick Moneyline parlay, a pick a loser, or get comfortable being uncomfortable bet of the week? You can hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at Rob Cressy. Also, make sure to tag at Covers. And remember, if you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The book of the devil hit you with the rap level of 10. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pump, pumping in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than two.